Good evening. This is Rabbi Feldman's Shir, October 28th. Tonight's Shir is sponsored by Ellen and Richard Gertler in honor of the birth of Rabbi Feldman's baby daughter.
Good topic.
Good evening. Thank you. I thought a little bit, go back to Simchas Torah a little bit. We would talk about a Simchas Torah topic. That is the last eight psukim in the Torah and the fascinating status and issues associated with those last eight psukim. Normally, if one writes an autobiography, so it's very unusual that one would see an autobiography. So I had a wonderful life and things were great, and then I died and I had a large funeral and a lot of people came and they said beautiful eulogies, and then afterwards they wrote great articles about me. Usually it stops when a person dies. They don't get to describe what happens afterwards. However, in the Torah, it's not exactly an autobiography, but it is being written down by somebody who appears in it, by Moshe, and yet it keeps going after Moshe dies. The last eight psukim of the Torah continue to discuss what happens after Vayamas Moshe, and that's a little hard to understand, considering the fact that Moshe is writing it down. This question is raised by the Gemara in the Maseches Bava Basra and in the Maseches Menachos, and there the Gemara gives what seems to be two different answers. It seems to be a machlokas, two different approaches. One approach is that indeed these last eight psukim were not written by Moshe, that writing of Moshe only applies to everything up until then, and from those last eight psukim on, it's actually written by Yehoshua. And then the Gemara quotes an objection to that perspective, that the Pasuk says earlier that there's a reference to taking the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote, and we're not going to refer to it as a Sefer Torah if it's lacking any psukim, if it's at all deficient, so we have to assume that Moshe wrote complete Sefer Torah with all the psukim that we have. So the other approach in the Gemara is that, yes, Moshe did write these last eight psukim, but it's a little different than the rest of the Torah. The rest of the Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu said it, Moshe wrote it, and it's like the way it says that Kadosh Baruch Hu said it, Moshe repeated it and wrote it, and these last eight psukim, God said it, and Moshe wrote them down, bedema. So what does that word mean, bedema? So, excuse me, the most common translation is that it's a reference to a tear, Demos, he was crying. It was being said, Baruch HaKodesh, that he was going to die and what would happen afterwards. And clearly that's a very emotional topic. So he wrote it down as a prophecy, and he wrote it down with a tear in his eye because of its content. There are those who suggest that maybe it means something a little different. The Vilna Gaon had an interpretation that was of a different nature, that dema is not a reference to a tear, but it's like the word demai, even though demai is spelled differently, but that it's a reference to being mixed up. Demai is, we have Kodesh and Chol mixed up into one. So too, here, it's a reference to how the Pesukim were written. And we know we have this notion that the Torah predates the world. That it was Torah before there was ever any of the events recorded in the Torah. So as the Vilna Gaon explains, based on earlier sources, but that means that it exists in a form that we cannot make out. It's not intelligible for us. And when it was written down by Moshe, it was put in a form that human beings can read. So the whole rest of the Torah Moshe put down in an intelligible fashion. And these last eight psukim were put into the Sefer Torah in a way that we cannot understand them. And then Yehoshua came later and he sorted it out. He put it in a way that we can now comprehend. But within that interpretation, it's not a machlokus in the Gemara, it's all one opinion. That it was written both by Yehoshua and by Moshe. It was first written by Moshe in a way that we wouldn't have been able to understand. And then Yehoshua came and he sorted it out. So it's not a machlokus, it's all one opinion according to that interpretation of Vilna Gaon. The more common interpretation is that it's a machlokus, two different ways to understand what's going on. Just parenthetically, while just mentioning what this Gemara says, there is a comment that the Maharsha has on this Gemara that's been probably misinterpreted very consequentially. excuse me. The Maharsha has a comment where he says that you notice that the rest of the Torah, God was saying it, and then Moshe was saying it, and then writing it down. And here, Moshe wasn't saying it out loud. He was just writing it down. So why did he want to say it out loud? So the Maharsha comments, because it wasn't true yet. So since it wasn't true, he was afraid, mechzik kishikra, he was afraid that it would look like sheker, it would look false. So there are those who read that Maharsha and say, oh, you see, you can write down whatever you want. There's no concern of sheker in writing, only a concern in speaking. So therefore Moshe didn't want to speak it, but he wasn't afraid to write it down. And the later Svarim explain it's not at all what he means. It doesn't mean that there's no prohibition of lying if it's done through writing rather than speech. What he means, he said, first of all, it wasn't sheker. He says, mechzik sheker. It looked like sheker because it wasn't true yet. It was, in essence, truth. It was prophecy, but it hadn't happened yet, so it would give the appearance of falsehood. So he didn't want to say it out loud. But in writing it down, he's communicating for the future. It's not going to be read yet. It's going to be read later. So he can write it down like one of these notes. If you've read this, I've already died. So it's true when the person reads it. So too, it was going to be true when it was communicated, and it was always true in potential, so it was never actual sheker. So he certainly doesn't mean to say that there's no problem in writing sheker. He meant that this wasn't sheker to begin with, it looked like sheker, but in writing, it wouldn't be a problem because it's meant to be communicated later when it was actually true. In any event, so that's the way the Gemara tells us the background of these psukim. So the Gemara goes on to say that whatever it is, whether it's one or the other or both, the fact is these psukim are different than the rest of the Torah. They have a different history to them. And because of that, they have a different halacha. So what is that different halacha? What does that mean? So it's not clear. The Gemara has an expression that can be interpreted in a number of ways, and we'll see it has been interpreted in a number of ways. Says the Gemara, because they're different, yachid karilsa. They can be read yachid. Or they should be read yachid. We don't even know what that means. They are read yachid. So yachid, as we see, as we will see, is a marvelously ambiguous word. It can mean a lot of different things. And indeed, there are at least five interpretations in the Rishonim as to what yachid means. According to Rashi, commenting on the Gemara, yachid means you don't break it up. It's not a place for a hosafa. These last eight psukim have to be read together. Have to be read yachid, together, as one unit. They can't be divided up. Okay. That's one view. A second view, perhaps the opposite, not exactly the opposite, is that of the Mekubetzer's quote from some Rishonim, that it means that you can't separate it from the previous psukim. It has to be read together as we do with the psukim before it. It has to be yachid together with the Moshe sections. The Moshe sections and the post-Moshe sections have to all be read as one. A third interpretation, which does not gain much support, is an opinion that's quoted in Tosus, and it suggests that it means yachid, meaning one person, as opposed to two. Because in general, when we have laning, we have two people reading. Because historically, the way it was meant to be is that the person who gets the aliyah goes up and he lanes. Nowadays, we're concerned that maybe a person's going to get an aliyah, maybe there's a chance he's actually not ready to lane. So we don't want the person to be embarrassed. So we have a professional, we have a Baal Koreh, who is given the job of laning, and the Ola is still supposed to be laning also. So we essentially have two people laning. Baal Koreh is laning loudly for everyone to hear, and the person who gets the Aliyah is up there laning together with him in an undertone. So normally we have two people laning. So this opinion is quoted in Tosfos that maybe that's what it means, that we shouldn't do it that way. These last eight psukim should only have one person laying. It's hard to understand why that should be. And as Tosfos points out, it's also not really matching with the historical reality. That wasn't the practice in the time of the Gemara. So it doesn't work to have it be the intent of the Gemara that, oh, you shouldn't do it the way they weren't even doing it. And they say that you shouldn't have two people reading it when it was not yet the practice to have two people reading it. Not so likely that's what it means, and this doesn't get so much support. So Tosfos says, probably like Rashi, you don't break it up into two aliyahs. Those are the first three opinions. The fourth opinion has gotten a lot of attention, and that's the view of the Rambam. The Rambam says, what does it mean when it says Yachid Karasad says it means that these psukim don't require a minyan. That Yachid is meant in contrast to Tzibur. Yachid is a way of, you know, we talk about Tzilos HaYachid, Tzilos HaTzibur. Yachid is often a way of saying not with a minyan. So that's what it means here. Yachid Kari Osam Beis HaKnesses. They can be read by a group or an individual that is not a minyan. So the Ravid, perhaps not surprised, so surprisingly, the Ravid doesn't like this. The Ravid says, what are you talking about? First of all, the Ravid prefers Rashi. He thinks Rashi is the correct view, that you don't break it up into two. But also, says the Ravid, what happened to the minyan? There's our tzibur, v'heichan hochu. What happened to the tzibur? So this is a hard question to understand. As the later Mefarshim point out, you know, the Ravid was so holy, he never saw anybody leave shul. That's a conceivable scenario, that you had a minyan and somebody left. It happens. And it happens to be that it's prohibited, especially if it leaves a group without a minyan. But so you can understand the scenario. You had a minyan and somebody left. And especially if you can believe that it ever happened, certainly could happen on Simchas Torah. That's exactly what is going to happen. Everybody gets there earlier and then they wander off. So you had a minyan there, and enough people who got there earlier already disappeared, so now you no longer have a minyan. So why is that so hard to believe? So the latest Svarim explain that the Ravid understands that. He knows that people could leave. That's not his question. That his question is that there is a halacha that if you have a minyan when you start something, so even if people from the minyan leave, you're able to continue. So what's his question? His question is not what happened to the minyan, but his question is rather, din tzibur l'heichan halchu. What happened to the halacha of the minyan? The halacha of the minyan would still continue to apply even if not everybody was still there. So the apparent point of the Ravid is that the Rambam's not telling us to finish, that this halacha would apply all the time, would apply to Parshas Lech Lecha. And if the minyan would leave in the middle, or some part of the minyan would leave, you would be able to continue waiting. So what's the chiddush of these psukim? What would separate them from anything else? So the truth is, it's a good question, and a number of the achronim offer possibilities as to what it could be referring to. Zolfi has an essay about this, his Mishnas Yaveh, and Rabbi Warman has a piece about this in his Arush Me'asukas, where they discuss the fact that there is a halacha that if you have a minyan for a davar shebekedusha and part of the minyan leaves, you're actually allowed to keep going. So if that's true all the time, so then what's different here? So the point is, there is a machlokas rishonim about that thing. That there are some rishonim who maintain that it's only true if you have a majority of the minyan left. Now, if you have 6, 7, 8 people, then you can keep going. But what if you have 3 people, 2 people? So maybe that's not enough. Maybe you can't keep going. So then the chiddush is, maybe the Rambam's point is that normally Parshas Lech Lecha, you can only continue if you have a majority of minyan left. But here, Vezos HaBracha, that you can continue even if you only have 3 people left, even if you only have 2. So you don't require a majority. Okay, could be in a narrow situation. Maybe that's what's going on. Parenthetically, it's probably relevant. There is a discussion that Rabbi Akiva Eiger has in his Chiddushim to the Shulchan Aruch. What does that din mean? This idea that you can keep going as long as you have, as long as you started with a minyan, you can keep going. So why should that be? Is it because the halacha of minyan really only means you only have to start with a minyan, but you don't have to finish? Or maybe you really do need a minyan there the whole time, but rubo kekulo, most of the minyan can represent the whole minyan. So 6 people of the minyan can represent everybody. So that would affect the question here, that if it's a just a minyan at the beginning, after that, and you presumably don't even need a robe after that. Any remnant will still continue what's going on. But if the din is that it's because the majority can represent the whole rest of the group, so then one could say that there has to be a majority. And therefore, then those habracha would be different in that sense. Another question, or another possibility, another arena for there to be a difference, is the question of what does it mean to continue? What does it mean to say that you're still doing the same thing? For example, let's say you have mincha and ma'ariv in shul. So you have a minyan for mincha, and then by the time you're ready to start ma'ariv, some of the people left. So you don't have a minyan anymore. So would you say, okay, we can still say baruch hu and kaddish for ma'ariv because it's finishing? Presumably, we wouldn't say that. You'd say that was there for mincha, but ma'ariv, I don't have a minyan. So we don't mean you can keep going forever. We mean you can finish what you're doing. That's when you can start something new. So we have to define what's exactly considered starting something new. And here it also gets more complicated nowadays, because once upon a time, so Kriyas HaTorah was different. There would be one bracha in the beginning and one bracha in the end. So all of laning was included within one set of brachas. So we could understand that that would all be considered the same thing. Nowadays, maybe not. Nowadays, every aliyah has its own bracha before and after. So maybe it means you can finish the aliyah. Maybe I can't start a new aliyah. I don't know. So that also gives some room to maybe say here this is different. That here, even if it's a new din, even if it's a new stage, you could keep going even without the min. Okay, so that's part of the attempt in general to figure out what's the chiddush of the Rambam, figure out what's the scenario where this din of no minyan would apply. But the basic question would be, why would you have such a din? What's the Rambam trying to say? Why would it be that these last psukim don't require a minyan? So Soloveitchik suggested, it's quoted by a number of his talmidim who wrote up his thoughts on this point, that we have to try to understand why it is that we need a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah. We would normally assume, that's probably conventionally understood, that Kriyas HaTorah is probably a davar shebekdusha. We are told in the Mishnah and the Gemara that if you want to recite a davar shebekdusha, whatever that means, it's one of these little hard to define phrases, but I want to do something that's called a holy activity that requires a minyan. So Kaddish Kedusha requires a minyan. And apparently, working backwards, it sounds like, okay, I know I need a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah, it must be that's a davar shebekdusha also. But it could be that's not the case. And the Soloveitchik thought that that's not how you understand it. Because he understood that davar shebekdusha means something that's responsive and declares the greatness of God. So Kaddish, Kedusha have that structure. They declare God's greatness and they're responsive, that requires a minyan. The Kriyas HaTorah itself is actually not that. Could be that the brachos of the Aliyah, that's the davar shebekdusha, which is why you may see the practice that there are many people who will stand for the brachos of the Aliyah, but not for the Aliyah itself. Because they understand the brachos to be the davar shebekdusha as distinct from Kriyas HaTorah. Hi. So it seems like the baruch would be the ikar, because that's where you get the responsiveness, and then maybe that's the idea. So just to work backwards and say because there's a minyan requirement means there's davar shebekdusha, maybe it doesn't work that way. You know, we also find this when it comes to benching and the bench of the minyan, they say elokeinu, so there are many people who stand up for that and say it's davar shebekdusha. And there are those who disagree. I think it was Soloveitchik disagreed, and Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he also expresses differently. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a davar shebekdusha just because it requires a minyan. Rav Shapira discusses this in his Sefer in Eretz Tzvi, and the Gemara says that it's not Derech Eretz to say Shem Hashem with less than a minyan. So you require a minyan to say Elokeinu, but it doesn't mean necessarily davar shebekdusha. So this idea of standing for that word doesn't necessarily have to follow. So we don't necessarily work backwards to say anything that needs a minyan is by definition a davar shebekdusha. So then why? Right, so that's interesting. Also, it seems to, on the one hand, the whole backwards equation works, but it seems to fit his formula, so why should it not be? If your question is Daska, the Rebbe supposedly said not to, and it does seem to fit his formula. It seems to be responsive, even though it's no more responsive than human is without the minyan. It's just that it brings in elocano into it. That's a, it's kind of an interesting question. It's a fair point. So in any event, then why would Kriya Satara need a minyan if it's not Devashita Kedusha? So the Rav explains that the whole theme of Kriya Satara is we are trying to evoke Maimed Hashinai, that we want to recreate the atmosphere in which the Torah was originally given. So that could be why we have the notion of the Vina Ve'emsa, because just by the mountain, all of the Jews were around the Torah, so too they should all be around the Kriyas HaTorah. One could also read from there an obligation again to stand, even though we just said not, to stand for Kriyas HaTorah, because that would also reflect Maimed Hashinai. And also because Kriyas HaTorah was done by Maimed Klal Yisrael, so you had all of the Jews there at that time. So we would want to have a minyan in order to recreate that atmosphere to represent the entire Jewish population. So if that's the case, so then the last day of Sukkim, it was not given in that way. It was not transmitted to Klal Yisrael at that time. So maybe it makes sense to say that we don't have to recreate that environment for these last day of Sukkim, because it's not the same history. It doesn't have the same pattern of being transmitted by Maimon and Klal Yisrael, so maybe it doesn't have the same requirement. Okay, so it could be that that's perhaps what the Rambam is getting at to explain why he would have such a position. In addition, he's trying to figure out where the position would make a difference. Why would it have any practical nafkamina? But as far as practical nafkaminas are concerned, the fact is most of these positions don't really affect us, the halacha. We don't really see them playing out so often. Unless you wanted to make us off and you didn't because of Rashi, but in general we don't perceive such a difference. The one view that really may make a difference for halacha is the fifth view. That's the view of the Mordechai. And the Mordechai interprets Yachid differently. You know, so far we've seen Yachid meaning together within itself, together with something else, one person instead of two, less than a minion. So no, what does Yachid mean? Yachid in the sense of Echad, Yachid of Miyuchad, a person who is distinguished, a person who is a prominent individual. And that this was apparently, in the way that Mordechai is explaining it, this is the source for the practice of Chasam Torah. Our attitude is that this Aliyah is a distinguished Aliyah, should be given to a Talmud Chacham, should be given to a Yachid. That's what the Mordechai is saying, that that's a Yachid Torah Yisrael, the Ola of this Aliyah, should be a prominent individual. So the Chacham Tzvi, in his Shuvis, says, I don't understand why that should be. That seems to go against the whole thrust of the Gemara. The whole point is that these psukim are worse. These psukim are less distinguished than everything else. Whether it was Yahshua writing them, whether it was Moshe writing them in a different type of format, whatever it is, it's not any better than the rest of the Torah. It's worse. So why should this be the most chashuv aliyah? It should be the least chashuv aliyah. So that's a good question. The Chacham Tzvi says you can't accept the Mordechai because that doesn't seem to follow at all. So the Kli Chemda, Sefer HaChumash, Kli Chemda was one of the students of the Avnei Nezer. His name was the Meir Dan Plotsky. So the Kli Chemda writes that maybe that's good for the point. But, what's the concern here? The concern is you're going to read these psukim. Now what's going on? Moshe dies. So a person who's listening could have a Chalisha Sadas. If you get depressed, you can say, okay, you know, we don't really have a Masorah anymore. We don't have a tradition. We had a tradition when Moshe was alive. But we know the Torah itself says there's not going to be anybody else like Moshe. It's one of the Yid Gimel Kari Amunah. You don't have anyone to take his place in that sense. So it's over. We don't have a Moshe anymore. So there's no longer any Masorah. So we have to make the point that it's not true. That yes, there's not going to be a Moshe, but we do have a tradition for Moshe, and we do continue to live the Torah tradition. And therefore, we need to have somebody who represents that. We need to have somebody who is a link in the chain, who is a Talmud Chacham in the tradition of Moshe Rabbeinu, in order to make that message, in order to send this point that no, don't say it's all over, it's Tavka not over, and that that's reflected in the choice of the Aliyah. Once you're saying this, the Kli Chemda makes the point that this is also reflected in perhaps the view of the Rambam as well. This attitude that he's taking, that it's not that it's a worse Aliyah, but that it's a better Aliyah, maybe that's also what the Rambam means. This view of the Rambam that we mentioned, that you don't need a minyan, so the Kli Chemda says maybe that could also be a reflection of a higher status. Because again, to look back at the words of the Gemara, so the Gemara had said, so the rest of the Torah, God says to Moshe, Moshe says, and he writes it down. So for the whole rest of the Torah, there's really something in between, interrupting, in between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. God's giving the Torah to Moshe, Moshe's giving it to the Jew. When it comes to these last eight psukim, so we see the Gemara says that Moshe didn't say them out loud. So essentially there's nothing interrupting in between God and the Jews. The Jews are getting it directly from God. So if that's the case, it's on a different level for positive reasons. So for the rest of the Torah, we need a minyan in order to recreate the Shechina, because we didn't get it directly from the Shechina in that sense. We hate God directly, but and there's something in between. When it comes to these last psukim, so they have their own Shechina still there, because they come directly from Moshe without any human in between. So maybe that's what the Rambam's getting at, says the Klichanda, that they don't need a minyan because they're holier than the rest of the Torah. They have their own Shechina. They don't require us to bring a minyan in order to invoke it. Okay, I mean, maybe we'll stop there with that. Just to review quickly what we spoke about. So we discussed the fact that the last eight psukim of the Torah, it's hard to understand how they came about. They seem to not be able to be written if they were after Moshe dies. So the Gemara has these two answers to that question, probably two opinions. Either that Yehoshua wrote them, or if that's problematic, maybe Moshe wrote them in a way that we don't understand. Either wrote them in a prophecy with a tear in his eye, the Dema, or like the Vilna Gaon understood, he wrote in a mixed up way, the Dimua, that Yehoshua then came and clarified, in which case both answers would be true. And we mentioned the Maharsha's comment that Moshe didn't want to say it out loud because it wasn't true yet, so it looked like Sheker. And we mentioned how someone interpreted that to say that it's okay to write down Sheker, you can't say it. And he said it's not what he means. He means that it only looked like Sheker, and he didn't want to say it when it wasn't yet true, but writing it down is not a problem. It's going to be communicated after his death. And then when the Gemara goes on to say that these psukim are different because of this whole history, and therefore Yachid Kariyosam, and we saw five views as to what it means Yachid Kariyosam. Either it means that you don't break up the psukim, that's the view of Rashi, which is a popular view a lot of the other Rishonim endorse, or it means that you connect them with the previous psukim, that's the view of Shita Mekubet says, or it means that you have the Balkarei and the Oled not reading it together, only one person reading it, that was a view quoted in Tosus, that Tosus rejected because it wasn't in practice in the time of the Gemara. And then we saw the Rambam's view, the Rambam had a whole different approach, that it means Yachid as opposed to a minyan, and you can read them in a basic Knesset without a minyan. And the Rabbi said, why should that be true? Where did the minyan go? And everyone else asks, what do you mean? Where did the minyan go? People left. And they explain that what he means is that the halacha of the kibbur can't leave because you're allowed to keep reading, you're allowed to keep going with the Devar Shavtusha even if the minyan is no longer there, or whatever we want to use the phrase, Devar Shavtusha, or whatever it is going to be. So we then looked at some possible explanations for what the chiddush could be, either that you would normally require a majority and now you could even go with a minority, or that maybe you can't start something new and maybe this would be considered something new and here you could keep going. But the question then was, so why would you have this view? And we mentioned a Soloveitchik approach that Kriyas HaTorah needs a minyan not because of Devar Shavu Kedusha, but rather because it's there to evoke Har Sinai. That it's not a Devar Shavu Kedusha, and we don't have to evoke Har Sinai for the last day of Psukim because the Torah wasn't given in that format for those Psukim. And I mentioned the Mordechai's position that it refers to Echad Yachid, and Yuchad refers to a person who is a special stature, that is a Talmid Chacham, and that's apparently the premise of the practice of Chasam Torah. And the question was, if that's true, so why should that be the case? If the Psukim are worse, why should they have a higher stature? So the Chacham Tzvi rejected it for that reason. The Klichan explained that we need to be mechazik the Jewish people who are going to think that the Masorah is over, so we tell them that no, look, we give a student of Moshe in order to show them the Masorah keeps going. And in that vein, he also said that's also a pshat in the Rambam, that these Sukkim are special because they don't need a minyan. They don't need a minyan, that's a sign of Cheshivas, because there was no interruption between the Shekhinah and the Jews, as opposed to the whole rest of the Torah. So therefore, they contain their own Shekhinah, and that will be enough in order to allow it to be read as this. Okay, so we'll stop there, and you should have a wonderful week.